Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this glorious day. It is game day. How about that? Game we've been talking about all week. Basically
action?
Since Monday.
More action?
Game day!
There we go. That sounds official. Titans and Colts tonight at Nissan Stadium. Whenever you hear that, you know it's official. What is it?
Hang on, Hank.
Game
day!
Still got to work on that one.
Yeah, that was a little muffled.
Well, see, there's a process.
We got to get our timing.
It's not like I can just click a button and all of a sudden I'm, you know.
What happened to rehearsals?
We didn't have one.
Oh.
Got canceled.
Got
postponed.
Board.
I got postponed along with half the SEC.
Oh.
COVID has affected the rehearsals.
More than half.
Yeah,
the SEC.
Good point.
We got a lot going on. Today, the Masters started off a little rocky, rainy, thunderstorm, lightning. They had delays, but I guess they have started things up. So we've got day one of the Masters, which still is so incredibly bizarre to say on November 12th. But that's where we are in 2020. We've got Titans-Colts tonight. A lot going on. A lot going on. And, yeah, we did have some action last night. I didn't pay that close attention to some action, but there were some good catches, some crazy plays. What stood out to you? Anything jump out at you?
Well, Ball State, you know, continues to screw me over. So
yeah,
there's that.
They've not been our friend. Ball State has not been our friend the last 2 weeks. They just find a way. They just find a way to the bed.
Yep. Because I went all Michigan. I was representing the state of Michigan last night.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. Yeah.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. Two Indians pitchers got – I don't know if that's ever happened before, but they gave the Cy Young to two guys that play for the Indians. Well, I guess one of them's a former. One of them's a former. But congratulations. The Cy Young does not leave the state of Ohio. How about that? Justin Bieber and Trevor Mauer. Or is it Bauer?
Bauer. Trevor Bauer.
A combination between him and Joe Mauer is what Darren was thinking of.
Yes. That was – I goofed it up. I was going to say Joe Mauer. I totally goofed it up. But, yeah, how about that? Trevor Bauer and our own Kirk Casale caught him. We had an interesting conversation with him during the playoffs going into the World Series. And Shane Bieber, who, man, just came out of nowhere and just lit it up. As we talked about it all year, but what did you guys make of the Cy Youngs getting doled out last night?
I think it was both of the guys that were expected to get it, so no real surprise. Very disappointing for the Indians that Bieber was so good during the regular season and then was just so bad in his start against the Yankees. That was a big-time bummer,
thanks for
bringing
that
for
up.
Him.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Bauer, of course, is a free agent, so he will be very sought after on the open market. So his stock is high. You come in, you want to Cy Young, you go free agent. That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, and he wants to basically sign one-year deals, I believe.
I don't know if people have figured that out about Bauer, but he does things a little different than everybody else. So
he beats to his own drum.
Yes, he does.
But it works.
He's got a one-man band. It has worked. It has worked for sure.
The guy can pitch.
The guy can pitch. You know, when you hear him, he's like, you know, I want good teammates, good front office, people I can get along with and people I like. And I'm like, rarely do you hear that from big-time free agents, you know? Like, they may say that. It may come off as lip service, but they're really about, yeah, I want to go to a winning team. And, you know, they're not going to say this part of it, but, you know, I'm going to go whoever's going to give me – has more zeros at the end of that number. But with Trevor Bauer, you just don't know.
We've had some great insights from Kirk Casale a couple times we've talked to him in his experience catching him. And as you were saying, he's a different bird. So I think what Bauer doesn't like is when you surround him with people that are maybe from the old school or from the this is how we do things. Bauer sort of has his own way that he studies religiously and really is committed to. And when he first started, I think people thought he was wacko, right? That, hey, you don't do stuff like this, weighted balls and, you know, extreme long toss and some of the stuff that really pushed the envelope. But he's turned out to be right in how he does it. So I think he just wants to make sure that, you know, he's in an environment where he can do his thing because he's proven over time that his stuff works. So he just, if you leave him the space to do it, he'll do the work and be productive. And you have to put up with some of the crazy stuff that ends up happening on social media, right? Because he does that too. He's out there. He's going to say some stuff where maybe some old school people would be like, what is he doing?
As long as he doesn't cross the line like he did in Cleveland, you know, you should live with it. Kind of going back to our conversation, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, you know, don't try to change people into you, okay? Let them be them. Yeah, he's most people view him as weird and kooky and completely out there, and maybe he makes people feel uncomfortable because he does, you know, things unconventionally. He doesn't do things what people have seen their whole life. But guess what? That's him. Let him be him. That's who he is.
Exactly.
That's what it works for him. You can't ask him to be you or to be what you think he should be. Let him be him. Like I said, as long as he doesn't cross the line like he did in Cleveland, which really surprised me that he acted that way. I mean, Terry Francona comes off as a, you know, a player's guy. And for him to just, you know, I guess he clearly wanted out badly and he got out. But as long as you don't do that, you should just tolerate what he does. If he's different, he's different. Does it work? Yeah, it does for him. It, you know what? What he does doesn't work for probably most anybody else. But that's how I've just never understood why people try to, you know, want people to be who they're not. Let them be
right.
Them. That's what works for them. You can only do what you know, what is comfortable for you, you know, until it doesn't work, right? And if Trevor Bauer was 2-16, then, you know, you have the right to go, hey, we need to talk. Like, I don't think your methods are really working. You got, you know, your ERA was around 5.5, and you were 2-16. But, you know, when it's working, you just get out of the way and let him be him.
Yeah, I mean, this whole notion of, oh, well, you know, the old school way, this is the way we need to do it. Yeah, if it works, then get out of his way. I mean, yeah, I think it was a couple days ago we had that conversation, mm-hmm. And it's true. And it applies to anything.
Anything.
You know, one thing that I used to, I'll just use this as a great example of, you know, Ryan and I started here at the same, around the same time, got in the business around the same time. And, you know, we would always get to the same point, but we might have different ways of doing it. But my way worked for me, his way worked for him. And, you know, when we were producing or even hosting or something like that, and, you know, it got recognized, like, all right, whatever works for you. Some people don't want to do that, though. Some people are like, no, it has to be this set way because that's the way I want it to be. And a lot of times if that happens, then you don't have success.
Let's sneak in before we go to Paul Feinbaum. We got Paul in the on-deck circle. Not sure what we're going to talk about other than a lot of games getting canceled, but we'll figure it out. Let's check in down in Augusta, Georgia. I mean, Elijah's not there, but he's going to give us a quick Masters scoreboard or leaderboard update. Elijah, what do you got?
Well, so far, there is not much, my friends. We had a lot of delays today, a lot of rain, some lightning in the area. But here's what I do have. In first, at 1-under through 2 holes, oh boy, Jazz Janawananon. As you all would expect, the
What's
clear
that?
Masters frontrunner.
Did you say that one more time? We didn't hear you.
Jazz Janawananon.
Okay.
I'm only 70% sure I am getting that correct. I feel bad for this guy. He's playing the 2 holes of golf of his life to lead the Masters, and some scrub in Nashville's butchering his name. There's a big tie for second. Between Corey Connors, Lucas Glover, C.T. Pan, Jimmy Walker, Charles Howell III, Brant Snedeker, Hideki Matsuyama, Webb Simpson, Adam Hadwin, Scotty Scheffler, Matt Kuchar, Kevin Na, Lee Westwood, Bryson DeChambeau, Louis Oosthuizen, John Rahm. That is the tie for second, all at even through one hole each. So there is not much going on right now, but we do have Jazz Janawananand as your leader of the Masters through two holes.
I'll just say this. I did go to DraftKings last night and put a little action on. Took some long shots. You know, it's fun.
Did
with
you take Janawananand on?
No, I did not.
You
I
might want
not.
To now.
I took a couple long shots that, you know, I thought were worth a fly. I just, you know, betting the leaders, I don't think there's value in that or the favorites. But I thought I would take a shot at some guys. So I did.
Was,
we'll see what happens.
Was Eldrick one of those?
No. I think that's a Patrick Cantlay, is that how you say it? That's one guy that I took a he's a guy that's up there. People really like him. I did put some money on him, but the guy Jason Cockrack, is that how you say it?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. That's the guy I've got kind of the long shot. Dabbled a little on a win and a top five with him. It pays out well if it happens. I have no idea if it's got a chance. So I just thought I would take some flyers on some kind of guys out on the perimeter, you know, rather than the big names.
I like it.
One more thing.
Chase, did you dabble any?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You went with all the big names?
No. No, like I put a little bit on Bubba. You know, Bubba was like plus 3,500 or something like that. So I dabbled a little bit on him.
I think he was plus 3,000 when I was
plus 3,000, yeah, that's what it was. DeChambeau, I did.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I dabbled.
Okay.
One more thing. Masters Leaderboard Update is brought to you by Music City Golf in Bellmead, home of all your golfing needs. Forgot to plug that in there, but.
Let me just tell you, guys, I don't know if you're rooting or if you're dreading, but if Cockrack is there these next 2 days, I'm going to talk about him a lot on the show, right? So just be heads up on that. All right, we will come back. Paul Finebaum, we talk to him every Thursday at this time. That's next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You'll hear that today starting at 2 o'clock, every day starting at 2 o'clock, Monday through Friday on 94.9. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint, smoother than smooth. And on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, is our guest at every Thursday at this time, Paul Finebaum. He's the host of that show open that you just heard. He's brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com. for your live and local mortgage expert. Paul, good morning. How you doing?
Guys, I'm doing great. I'm doing better than the sport of college football right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, today's password is postponed. Postponed. How many SEC games are postponed? You know, I guess there's three left standing. Do you feel pretty comfortable that we'll still have three before we get to Saturday?
Yeah, I do, but it doesn't take much to call one off. I was speaking to Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, and he told me they had two positives, and it shut down the game with Tennessee. I mean, so that's all it takes. Vanderbilt's playing Kentucky. I think I have that right, and thank goodness. I mean, where would we be if that game had not been gifted to us this weekend?
We lobbied that should now be the CBS game, and I don't think – I think it fell on deaf ears. It fell on deaf ears.
Yeah, no, it's – you know, you talk to a lot of people when you're covering stories like this, and, you know, the commissioner came on our program the other day, Greg Sankey, and he said we knew we would have some bumps, but this week was really beyond anyone's imagination. But it started happening early with signs of Alabama and LSU being in trouble, then Auburn had an outbreak, and then the A&M situation, and then Missouri, which has been under pressure all year because they have a small scholarship number. And it it has given people time to think about the future, the next 5 to 6 weeks, and it's not as clear cut that we'll get there as it was a couple of weeks ago when everything was going great.
Yep, good point. I want to ask you, just because of your dealings with him over the years, and we brought him up many times on the show this week, and ironically, then he came into the news and he gets a contract extension. I don't know if that necessarily means somebody's off the market. We've seen coaches get contract extensions and they still leave. But Hugh Freeze, and, you know, they got a lot of attention because they beat Virginia Tech over the weekend, and they're 7-0. And SEC fans are very familiar with Hugh Freeze. Just what's your take on Hugh Freeze, on what he's done to this point? And if he keeps winning at Liberty, how do you think this is going to play out, in your opinion?
Yeah, he is that name that's always been lurking. And, you know, since he was fired, he not only sat out. I mean, he really he could not get a job in the SEC for 2 years because he was blocked by the conference office. Nick Saban wanted to hire him as the offensive coordinator. Five other teams did, but they wouldn't let him. Biggest reason was because of, you know, Ole Miss was on postseason ban, and the conference felt it was not fair to let him coach while his players could not play in a postseason event. So bringing us to where we are now, I think while there is still some baggage, winning cures that. I don't need to tell you there are plenty of coaches right now, in, especially in basketball, who seem to fight on regardless of what the allegations may indicate. And because of that, I think there are some places where he could fit in. Contract extension this week means absolutely nothing. I mean, that was laughable. Freeze was on our program Monday saying, you know, it depends on the situation. If we get the right, you know, if I get the right offer. I mean, he wasn't being shy. So, you know, what's going to become open, I think, is really the better question. If you look at it objectively, he might be smart to wait a year when there are better offers than some of the ones that could be coming open this year. But ultimately, some athletic director is going to say, you know what, it's not pretty, but we need to hire this guy because he's such a good offensive coach and he runs an exciting team. And I will tell you, and I'll shut up after this, I know Hugh Freeze very well. About a year and a half ago, I was in Oxford, and we went out to dinner, and I sat there for a couple hours and listened to him explain what happened in the incident. And I, even though I'm a hardened journalist, I found myself saying, you know, whether this is true or not, this is one great story. And as a result of that, I think he can get a job.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, that's kind of where I was going next, is just – I know in your dealings what you truly thought about him. We don't need to relive what happened at Ole Miss. We all know what happened and how it played out. Interesting. Well, as I've said all week, you know, if you're looking for a hung jury, you only need one juror, right? It's like you only need one team to raise their hand and say, "Yep, we'll take you." And I don't think that'll be hard, especially if he keeps having success. Do you think ultimately, if one AD or school raises their hand and says, yep, we're ready to get back into our winning ways, do you think it's in the SEC or do you think it's somewhere else?
I think he's best positioned in the SEC. So, you know, where are the openings going to be? Still don't know. I mean, South Carolina is one that is, you know, depending on whether, you know, where we go with the season, that could possibly open. I don't think Vanderbilt is necessarily a good destination point for Hugh Freeze. Next year, could it be Auburn? Oh, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but Tennessee. So I think he has to weigh it. The one thing that Freeze has going for him, other than what he's done, is he's represented by Jimmy Sexton, who I think at this moment represents either 11 or 12 SEC head coaches. There's nobody who knows more about the SEC. He knows the openings before they happen. It's worth saying that Sexton, when Butch Jones was fired, he had all three finalists. He represented all three finalists when Jeremy Pruitt got the job. So, I mean, you can't be any more plugged in, and he's been a client. Hugh Freeze has been one of his clients for a long time. So, you know Sexton's talking to people already.
Do you really matter as a coach if you don't have Jimmy Sexton representing you?
There's good and bad. I've had coaches call me and say, you know, assistant coaches who say, I can't get a job because he's representing like five other assistant coaches. And one of the three people, well, only two people who didn't get that Tennessee job called me in the middle of it and said, I'm not sure Jimmy's, you know, I don't know which way Jimmy is representing me here. But, you know, Sexton, by the way, that happens in every business, though. In the business that I'm in, I had an agent, he just left to take over at the World Wrestling Association, or WWE. And, you know, he represented 20-some-odd clients. Most of them were at ESPN, and quite often, you know, he had two or three people up for the same job. But that's the way of the world.
Mm. Paul Feinbaum is with us. Paul, I'm curious your outlook now, because, as you know, programs can kind of get a label. Notre Dame has been a very good team, but they've had the reputation. When they go up against the real big dogs, they've struggled. They had this at home, but give me your thoughts on what this did for them, beating Clemson, albeit without Trevor Lawrence.
It meant everything, and I don't think the Trevor Lawrence factor is all that big because of how well his replacement did in the game.
Boy, he's good.
And I think what's happened now is that Notre Dame so state the obvious. I mean, even with a loss to Clemson in the rematch at the ACC title game, they're a legitimate contender to get in the playoffs, some of it depends on how everything else falls and what the calendar looks like. And you know, right now the biggest issue everywhere is, you know, can you get enough games in? And you know, I don't think it's a big deal for Alabama. It could, you know, Ohio State losing the Maryland game this week really hurts them. We still have no idea what to make out of the Pac-12. They're going to have to, either SC or Oregon will have to be undefeated. But I think if Ohio State, you know, makes it through and they're the Big Ten rep, and let's say Alabama, you know, wins the SEC, then I think Notre Dame right now would definitely, with a loss to Clemson, would be the fourth pick.
It's interesting, and as you said, Paul, Clemson still has a way to get back in there. But how do you think it will be looked at? Because DJ Uiagalelei played so well, they certainly didn't lose because of him. He was so good that the whole, well, you beat him without Lawrence, that does seem to be not as big of a factor. Or is it? Because, I mean, you do wonder what would have happened if Lawrence were there. But I don't know if that kid could have played much better.
Well, then you just simply have to measure the next game. And that's to the advantage of the 12 people on that committee. So, I mean, if Clemson comes in and wins the game 45-14, then I don't think Notre Dame's going to get the bid. But if that game is close, then you have to say, okay, well, Lawrence made a difference, but not a significant difference. But no, Notre Dame also has to finish the deal. I mean, they can't blow this week against BC and you know, slouch their way toward mid-December.
Talking to Paul Feinbaum here with us, brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. So that kind of leads me along the same lines of what I was going to ask. I mean, if you have the two ACC teams that work their way in, I mean, what does this mean for a team like Florida that right now their only blemish is to Texas A&M? Now, obviously, in this scenario, they would have to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game, but does Notre Dame's win make it that much harder for the committee with some of these strong SEC teams and trying to get multiple teams in?
I think if Florida beats Alabama, then they'll get in. It's almost impossible to deny the SEC champion, especially one that has just beaten the number one team in the country. If Florida loses, then you flip it around. What about Texas A&M? I think Texas A&M is in trouble. It's an impressive win over Florida. Yeah, they did not look good against Alabama. They have looked great since then, but I don't think sitting there on that December 19th date is going to help them unless they're playing a makeup game that day, which still won't help them very much. And it's hard to pull that off. And that's where Notre Dame will get so much out of having played in the ACC title game. I mean, it will be just beyond ironic if them opting into the ACC for that 1 year and even losing the title game gets them in. I will not rule the Pac-12 out yet, but I don't trust the Pac-12, and not to get into COVID talk too deeply, but as this virus spreads across the country and you start to wonder about where we're going to look nationally in 4 weeks, I think the South, you'll see football, but who knows about the governors of the Western states? I mean, I mean, they may not let anybody get out of their house in December.
Yeah, I guess another way I should have put it too. So, if in your opinion, if Alabama, if their only loss is the SEC title game, do you still think they'd be out, or do you think that?
Yeah, I think if it's I always hate to use the cliche, a close game. But you know, at that point, Alabama would have run the table during the regular season. Their only loss would be in a title game against a top five team, and they played so well too. I mean, I think Alabama just ought to be put in there right now.
So we know Tennessee, Texas A&M has been postponed this week, so it's another week for Jeremy Pruitt to try and figure out what the heck is going on with his program. We saw Harrison Bailey make an appearance at the end of the Arkansas game. I mean, does this make it even, I guess, easier for him to stick with Bailey now that you have the extra week not to play a game, that he's going to be the guy moving forward?
Seems logical, doesn't it? But logical and Jeremy Pruitt don't often end up in the same sentence. I cannot believe he'll go back to Garantano. I just don't. He's got to start thinking futuristically, if I just go down the tubes with this guy, where is that going to put me? I think we can all agree that no matter how good or bad this season ends for him, and probably a break that he didn't play this week, it gives him a little time to breathe. Jeremy Pruitt moves on to next year, but you just don't need the chips piling up against you next year, and I think he'll have those if he remains stubborn. I mean, his stewardship of this team has not been great. I mean, I know that doesn't sound like I'm really going out on a limb there. But,
So you think he should have kicked a field goal down two possessions late in the game?
I mean, it's just baffling for me to try to figure out what he's doing.
Yeah, well.
Well, us too.
He certainly creates a lot of fodder for the show every week. I just – and the other part, Paul, and you've been around this, you know, in Alabama, it's just everybody gets it. He came from the Nick Saban staff, and, you know, we've got kind of two unique situations, one in this market right here and then two in the state when you count Jeremy Pruitt in Knoxville. They came from, you know, arguably the best – in those two sports, right? Nick Saban and Bill Belichick and Vrabel and Pruitt. But nobody wants to hear how you've seen what winning looks like and you know what it takes to get there. And to just get there, you know what I mean? Nobody wants – everybody knows where you came from. You don't need to keep reminding people. But when you lose, you know, all these games by five touchdowns or more, nobody thinks that you've really – know you know what it looks like and how to get there. Is that fair to say?
It is, and I always – with Jeremy Pruitt, I know people have talked to him privately about, will you listen to people in terms of communication? And he just doesn't. He's an absolutely terrible communicator. And when you're the face of a program that's the state school that, you know, at least at one time in history was a really important college football program nationally, not anymore, by the way. You have to be able to get that message across. Philip Fulmer, even when there was criticism of him as a head coach, he had a very charming Southern way of communicating. Others have done it. Pruitt comes off as a country high school coach, and that's not the image you want at the University of Tennessee. At least, well, I don't think it is. Maybe since the many years have passed since I graduated, life has changed, but. Yeah, he doesn't even try. He just walks into those meetings, whether it's during the week or after the game, as if we're keeping him from something more important.
Yeah. Good stuff as always, Paul. We really appreciate it. Have a great rest of your week, and we look forward to talking to you next Thursday.
Guys, always enjoy it. Talk to you then.
All right, that is Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Remember, Paul Feinbaum coming up today at 2 o'clock every day, Monday through Friday, 2 to 6 on 94.9. We'll continue that discussion. Two things I want to touch on. The Tennessee part that we just heard Paul Feinbaum talk about, Jeremy Pruitt, that we've talked about on the show. He took it a little bit further. I want to go back to the Clemson and Trevor Lawrence as well, because it does seem to be a divided house. I've talked to a lot of people this week, and there are people that feel strongly that Trevor Lawrence, it's the same result. I mean, it wasn't about the offense. It was more about the defense. And there's others like maybe me that say, hogwash, give me a break. Don't act like it's the same. It would not have been the same result with Trevor Lawrence. We'll discuss next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday morning, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints, smoother than smooth. Phone line, text line open, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll talk with the GM to start the second hour of the program. Floyd Reese will join us as we'll get into tonight's game, Titans and Colts at Nissan Stadium. Big AFC South matchup. Let's start with the Jeremy Pruitt stuff that Paul Feinbaum brought up. It certainly feels what he said, and wasn't that interesting. And I don't think this is going to surprise any of us or probably anybody out there listening. He comes off that way, right? That, you know, because I've brought up, like, why doesn't he just say this? And maybe there are people trying to help him, but and Paul just put people have been trying to help him, but he just doesn't want to listen. And I've got to be honest. You've heard me say it so many times over the years. You better get with the times, right? You better adapt or you get left behind. You got to. That everything changes. And the old school dinosaur mentality of this is the way I've done it my whole life and I'm not changing, that's fine. That's okay. But you're going to get left behind. And it certainly is starting to feel like, hey, this is what I do. This is how I do it. I'm not interested in listening or changing. And I just think that's the wrong approach. I just really do. I think he's handled this situation horribly. I think he needs to get off the narrative. I know what it looks like. I know what winning looks like. We get it. Everybody's seen your resume. But that doesn't make anybody feel any better when you get creamed every time you know what it looks like. Well, all the teams that are currently doing it, and they know what it looks like because they're doing it, you get smashed by them. So telling your fan base that, hey, I've been there, I know what it looks like and how to get there when you look like the gap is miles and miles apart, I think he just, in my opinion, he's got to get off that narrative. It's all about, right? It's all about the actions. It's not about the words.
Yeah, you know what it looks like with Nick Saban and you know what it looks like with these great players that right now you haven't gotten your program to that point. So To me, it's a moot point to even bring that up. That yeah, you know what it looks like. It's a different circumstance. So I agree with you. I don't really think it does anything. You do that in an opening press conference when you're trying to win the press conference.
Right? Yes. Yep. That's day one. Yep.
Because everybody, don't do that. The fact is, everybody that's hired has had a certain amount of success somewhere.
Exactly.
Or else you wouldn't get the job. Speaking of the opening press conference, I think the very first day that he was introduced, we all kind of said, wow,
yeah,
this guy isn't the best communicator in terms of just a presence at the podium, which we said at the time doesn't mean everything. But A, you would have to improve in that area, which he has to a degree, but it can help you if you are really savvy with the media to buy some time through the tough times. And, you know, I think we nailed it from the start. If you're very successful, nobody's really going to care that you're not real good with the media or not the best in press conferences. But if you struggle and you have trouble articulating what's going on and, you know, building some allies, then it doesn't help you. It doesn't help you at all. And I thought that was great insight from Paul Feinbaum, that not only is he not a great communicator with the media, that he almost acts like, I really want to be somewhere else. I don't want to be here. And that doesn't help. So I do think that's something that he has struck out with and not really realized how important that can be. Whereas I think he was just, hey, listen, I'll be winning enough that it doesn't matter. And he's not the first coach to fall into that trap, right? There's plenty that have just kind of said, the media, I'm not going to worry about the media. I'm just worrying about winning.
Well, Butch Jones, right?
Yep.
I mean, he was like, well, this is how I've operated at Central Michigan and Cincinnati, and this is how I'll operate at Tennessee. And, that stuff, those cute sayings are cute when you're winning. And everybody will tolerate them, and everybody will – and a lot of them, people will lap them up. But the minute you're not winning at the level you're supposed to win, those cute sayings get turned against you.
But there's not only – it's not only the cute sayings, because the cute sayings can be okay, but there's a little bit of a mindset that I know more than you do, right? Which you probably do because you're a football coach. But if you give that vibe off, you kind of you rub the media people the wrong way. It's like, don't treat us like we don't know anything, right?
Right.
And there's that. I think I get that vibe that he's above the media. He's above doing a lot of interviews with a lot of people. If you come across as an everyday guy, even though you're making all these millions of dollars and you're going to take the heat, if you can give that everyman vibe, and I think Derek Mason does a good job with this, right? He's not the smoothest talker, but he'll talk to everybody, and he talks to you person to person on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's benefited a lot from that.
I agree.
He's a likable guy, and that has helped him to this point.
He's in, what, year six of Vanderbilt?
Yeah.
I mean, how many coaches can say, I was talking with the media in year six as the football coach? There's been a lot that never saw year six. So, to your point, yeah.
I'll never forget.
It has worked for him.
I think it was two or three years ago in Atlanta at SEC Media Days. He showed up a day before Vanderbilt was supposed to go. He walks on Radio Row, and he comes up to me and he goes, I want to come on with you guys. And I go, all right, cool. Yep, we'll get you going today. And he literally went to every radio station and did, I think he might have missed two or three.
But Phil Fulmer used to do that.
Yeah, and he did. And here's the best part of it. He did it by himself. He didn't have, Larry or anybody with him, media relations. He did it by himself. And that was important to him to go and do all those interviews. And I remember bumping into him again, like, Coach, you good? And he goes, oh, having a good time. He knew exactly what he was doing. And that was also the same year that I was told by the University of Tennessee that, yeah, Coach Pruitt will be coming back through. He'll come on. He's going to do radio for the state. Never
Ghost.
Saw him.
Ghost.
But, I mean, if that's what, Derek Dooley wasn't a very good coach, but he did, he did more than Butch and – and Butch did some, but you had to really work to get Butch on, especially later on.
Yep. I think the other part is just the handling. Right now, this quarterback situation is really – his hole is getting deeper and deeper. It is – he needs to figure this out. He's got to have somebody strong-minded on his staff to pull him aside and shut the door and say, Coach, I respect you. You've got to change course. You've got to. This is not the route to go.
Well, that brings to mind another thing that Paul brought up, Paul Feinbaum, in our interview, that I think that's the silver lining of not playing this game on Saturday, because now you can regroup and it gives you more time to come to what I think is the inevitable decision that you've got to play the freshman. It's what the fans probably want. If you did a vote who should start, don't you think they would all vote for him? Now, if he goes out and, does terrible, then that's the thing. But who's always the most popular guy? The guy that you haven't seen, right? The guy that you haven't seen that has high recruiting credentials, that's always the guy the fans want to see. So this is now gives you time to start preparing the team that way and preparing the quarterback that way.
But do you think really people, they would be howling? The Wolves would be howling? No, I think if he's not ready, then show them he's not ready. And then everybody could say, okay, all right, well, I guess Garantano's the best thing you got. You better get that fixed in the offseason. or maybe Bailey will be ready. But I think he's – I don't understand what he thinks he has to lose by playing Bailey. And by the way, if you think it's just too soon and you're gonna stunt his growth, then he can't be as highly touted as, exactly. as everybody thought, right? I mean, we see young guys get thrown in there right at the beginning. Look, you're five-star, and I mean, what was it? He had five – what did Vince say? He had five major schools wanted him before he'd taken a snap in high school? I mean,
right.
Come on.
Right. I mean, Georgia is such a hotbed that you're gonna get that. And, of course, that means nothing long-term. Once you start playing it, you know, the more you play, the less it becomes about, well, he was a good recruit, right? At a certain point, you got to be able to just play. But I understand they don't want to put him in a position to fail. But on the other hand, if you don't have anybody else, I go back to the Kyle Shurmur, right? The only reason they went to Kyle Shurmur as a freshman, they wanted to redshirt him, but they simply got to the point where they just didn't have any other options. But Kyle Shurmur was able to get reps, and he got better over time. And because they started him a little quicker, he got better quicker. So that would be my argument. You're not really going anywhere anyway, and it's 2020. As Paul said, in another couple of weeks, who knows how many games we'll even be able to play.
Right.
I mean, we got some serious issues around the country. It's going to continue to be difficult for everybody to get their games in. So all the more reason to let him play.
And I'll say this too. You're showing that you believe in him. You're saying, hey, we're going to go through this together. There's going to be some growing pains. You have to understand that. But
we got you, man.
We got you.
Here's
the keys to the car. It's yours. So we're gonna. If you ding it up, we'll help you through that. We've got insurance. Right.
We'll get it fixed.
And you see other schools do that, that's how they go about it. It's like, hey, we know you got to learn. There's only one way to learn. This is the way to do it. This whole protecting him or letting him learn. I mean, that way of thinking is gone. And Jeremy Pruitt needs to understand that if you want to build this program and it all starts with the guy in your center, you got to start that process now.
Speaking of guys starting under center, let's talk about the other layer. I've had this discussion with several people this week, and Paul brought it up, or Willie, I think it was your question, and a lot of people feel like, yeah, well, they threw for over 400 yards, they scored a ton of points, offense wasn't the problem, it was the defense. Okay, fine. Trevor Lawrence doesn't play on defense. I get that. But the narrative out there that a lot of people are saying, hey, it wouldn't have been any different. You know, offense was not the issue. Defense was – I just simply cannot sign up for it. I will not go there. Don't tell me that Clemson is the same no matter who's under center. Like this kid, if he throws for 450, it's going to be the same as if Trevor Lawrence. No. No, it's not. You can't tell me it's the same. Did you watch the week prior? So Trevor Lawrence hasn't played in two games. And they had to come back in the fourth quarter to beat Boston College at home. And then they lost to Notre Dame in a fun game in overtime. Trevor Lawrence, since he's been under center at Clemson, has lost how many games, guys?
One.
Was it one?
I was going to say, I shouldn't say games because that indicates that it's plural. No, it's he lost one, and that's to LSU last year in the national championship. So they have been flawless under Trevor Lawrence his entire career, and you're telling me things would be the same? No. No. Sorry. I am not going to sign up for that. There's people that believe that and are adamant about it that, you know, you can't hold that against Notre Dame. Often, you know, they deserve that. No. If you're asking me to view that win the same, then fine. I will tell you, then let's just say this is the matchup in the ACC championship game. Trevor Lawrence is back. I'll take Clemson. You take Notre Dame. What do you want to bet? And I'll sign up. That's my rebuttal to that.
I think I agree with you, but I do want to put it in perspective. Notre Dame still deserves a lot of credit because they have not been able to get that kind of win in a while. So they've taken a step forward. They're better. They deserve accolades for being better than they've been in the past, where they've made the playoffs a couple of times and they've gotten overmatched, right? The two times they've made the playoffs the last few years, they've been overmatched in the semifinal. So I think they've closed the gap. And the other thing is we don't need to shortchange DJU, right? That kid was really good. They didn't lose the game because of him, right? He wasn't perfect, but, man, he is good. right?
He's good, but he's not Trevor Lawrence.
No, nobody. Because really, other than maybe Justin Fields, there's really nobody that's Trevor Lawrence. He's a special player and an experienced player. That means something, especially in that environment. So I get that, no question. And in the rematch, it will be on a neutral field. It won't be at Notre Dame. And I do think it was a factor that Notre Dame was playing at home. But yep. It's interesting. You know, you look at if Notre Dame does do what they are supposed to do and get to the championship game, which is not a given, right? They could still slip up somewhere, maybe. You got a crowded house. You got Clemson, Notre Dame. You've got the two. You got at least two suitors in the SEC, plus maybe a third, right? If Texas A&M sitting there with one loss and doesn't get to the championship game, then Ohio State. It could be a really interesting decision that you have to come to choose the four.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I will just say that, you know, Notre Dame still put up 47 on that defense. Now, with all that said, you know, does Clemson put up more than 40 with Trevor Lawrence? The answer is probably yes. So,
Remember,
it's when you say 47, there's two overtimes.
Yeah,
two overtimes. Right. So that it's, you know, look at after 60 minutes, what was that? 33.
Yeah, 33.
Is it the same game with Trevor Lawrence under center?
Probably not.
No, I mean, look at the games this year.
I still think it's
close. Clemson has destroyed everybody.
They have.
Well, they wouldn't have destroyed
everybody.
I still think it's close.
And yet he comes out. He doesn't play. They had to hang on for – they had to come back. They trailed the entire game at home to Boston College and won in the fourth quarter, and then they lose this one. Guys, it's just not the same. I mean, it's not even close.
Okay.
People that act
you say it's not close. You say Notre Dame Clemson is not close.
Okay, I'm on record right now. Elijah, save the tape. I'm just telling you, without even knowing how the rest of the season is going to play out, if this is how it ends up, these two back in the ACC championship game, Trevor Lawrence is back and everything, and he's healthy, right? It's not. They're a 2-touchdown favorite over Notre Dame. They're a 14-point favorite.
I don't agree with you.
I don't
think
14.
I think it's closer.
I would say this. I would take Notre Dame with the 14.
Oh,
but even though I agree with you, Darren, to a point, but not that much because Uyangalele, and apparently there's not a lele. It's not like a ukulele. It's
no.
Uyangalele, which is really hard to say. I've watched now Mike Tirico and Joe Tessitore try to announce play-by-play.
Let's call
him
DJU.
Good grief. Is it hard in a quick moment to get that out? I wouldn't mind if you just called him DJ or DJU. And those are two really good announcers,
yeah.
Right? That's a tough name. But, man, he's good. Darren, you have to say that even Trevor Lawrence at his best at Notre Dame, they don't win that game easily. Because
it's not as easy as you think it is.
Is Mac Jones good? Yes. Is he Tua good? No. He's
a first-round pick, though.
He's not, well, you could take him in the first round. I wouldn't take Mac Jones in the first round.
Well, he's going to go in the first round.
That's fine. But, you know, there are a lot of guys go in the first round, and they're not good. So, I mean, that's fine.
They're not good
maybe
in college?
Somebody...
Guys that go in the first round aren't good in college? Mac Jones is going to get some Heisman votes.
Dwayne Haskins was good at Ohio State. How's Dwayne Haskins played out in the NFL?
I'm not talking about how they do in the NFL. I'm talking about NFL talent and playing well in college.
If an NFL team wants to take him in the first round, that's fine. I don't believe he's a first-round talent. Okay, Tua and Mac Jones, they're not the same. They're not even close. Mac Jones is really good. Tua is way – it's just same deal. Trevor, this kid is good, and I don't know how good he's going to be. He's at the beginning.
You don't know how good he's going to be?
But he's not Trevor Lawrence good. He's just not, at least not right now. Let me see the rest of his career in college.
When Justin Fields was a true freshman, did you know how good he was going to be? Based on what you saw,
well,
he was pretty good.
If we believed all the hype coming out of Georgia.
Okay, that's my point, though. DJ Uiagalelei is hyped. He was a five-star guy. He could have gone anywhere.
That's what Clemson does.
He's huge.
Dabo
Sweeney
and his
staff, of an arm.
They stack up five-star quarterbacks. See, that's how it works. They have the next guy up.
They have it going. They have all the momentum. That's my point. Is there was not that much of a drop-off. He threw for 400 and something yards.
Like I said, if anybody out there wants to believe that it's the same outcome or it's the same type of game, that's fine. I mean, we won't know until, like I said, if they meet again. But I'm just telling you, I don't buy that. I don't subscribe that it's the same outcome. I don't believe Notre Dame wins the game, and I'm not trying to.
But no, you're saying 14-point underdog. There's two. That's two very different things.
I'm just
thinking
you.
That Clemson would beat them the next time, and Clemson would blow them out.
I don't.
That's two different things.
I think it's close, especially in a championship game.
Okay,
and I think this one would have been close.
It's a double-digit favorite. Do you think you guys think it'll be under double digits?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not an odds maker, but if it were 10
I would
or
say
more,
a,
I would you put out 14, Darren, so you're trying to bring it down.
I think
you said 14. Give me 14 right now, I'd take 14.
I would say 6.5 on a neutral field. I don't think it's double digits.
Okay. I'm willing to put something.
Well, we'll come up with something.
Okay.
No, you have to say what you said. 14.
Yeah. You're sticking with 14.
He said 6.5.
No,
I said
Chase,
14.
Chase, you asked. Those are two different questions.
Let's meet in the middle of double digits.
What we think the difference is different. You said 14. I'm taking 14 in a heartbeat. If that's the case.
What if it's 10.5? What are you taking?
I would definitely lean Notre Dame, but you're giving me 14, so I'm taking 14.
We'll have to pick this up later. Yes. I don't know why Willie has stayed out of it, but yet he's negotiating.
I'm taking 14. No, I didn't say 14. You said 14.
We're trying
so
to
I'm taking 14.
You're negotiating. And you don't want to be a part
No, you started to drive the number down when you realized you had put your foot
no,
in your mouth.
No, that's not true.
They're not going to be a 14-point favorite.
I said save the audio. 14 points.
Okay. Yeah. So save the audio. I'm taking 14.
Oh, it's been saved.
He's put it there with your golfer. That we're not sure is the
no.
Right
I guess Elijah, we've had a development. He looked it up during the break, and it's Kokrak. That's what this is. Elijah told me during the break that it's Kokrak.
I investigated, and by investigate, I went on YouTube and found a golf channel profile they did on him, and they used the name Kokrak.
Kokrak.
So there you go. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk with the GM, Floyd Reese, to start the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.